Hi folks, welcome to episode 12 of the Epochs of the Lotus Eaters. I'm joined by Bo, and today we're going to be talking about the Scythians, those horse nomads of Greek, I was going to say myth, but they weren't mythical. They were just, they were kind of semi-legendary to the Greeks though, weren't they? They were kind of like terrifying in a way, and like on the fringes of civilization as they understood them, and they didn't understand the Scythians very well at all, did they, really? And yeah. So it was Herodotus who really sort of gave us a sort of good insight into the culture initially, as I understand it. And of course, in the modern era, we have a much better understanding of these things, I assume.
Yeah, definitely.
Right, okay, well, where do we begin?
Good question. Where do we begin? There's so much to say. And they are quite mysterious. Perhaps mysterious is a bit strong, but there's many ambiguities about the Scythians, or Scythians, however you pronounce it. I think you're quite right to say that they're really on the fringes of the Greek world, very much so. And the best account we've got is Herodotus. In book four, he talks a fair bit about them. But we've got bits and bobs here and there, like most ancient history. You know, Strabo, we've got a few lines in Strabo, of course, always Strabo. I think Aeschylus mentions them once or twice. Pliny the Elder. Anyway, bits and bobs here and there. And I think the Greeks, if we're going to talk about the Scythians as, or at least to begin with, as Herodotus perceived them, the Greeks of that period, so what are we talking, the 4th century BC? Is Herodotus? I should know Herodotus' dates off the top of my head, really.
I thought he was 5th, but I'd have to check.
But Herodotus says that they sort of perceived the world as that there were four sort of great peoples, barbaric peoples on the borders of the known Greek world, the sort of the Celts, the Libyans, which is just Africans, all of Africa really, the Indians of the Indus Valley culture, I suppose, and the Scythians. So the Scythians are sort of one of the four great people, and I suppose one of the first things you would have to say is that it's sort of a coverall term, or it's a very elastic name. There's all sorts of different peoples.
Well, it's literally like us saying the Africans. Isn't
yes,
it?
Exactly.
It refers to more of a sort of geographic range, and who knows what kind of cultures. And I mean, you're leading into the cauldron of nations anyway in Central Asia. So who knows, you know, what the origins or the beliefs of these people were.
Yeah, when Herodotus talks of the Scythians, he talks as though, or if you just read it at face value and you don't know much about them, you might think he's talking about an individual tribe of people. Yeah. But it couldn't possibly have been that. The amount of land we're going to be talking about is gigantic.
Yeah.
And the span of time is pretty huge. And it's just clear now in the modern view that there would have been all sorts of different peoples, different ethnicities or admixtures of people. At what point were the sort of the more European end of Indo-European Scythians? At what point do they come sort of a Mongolian admixture? I mean, Herodotus obviously doesn't know, doesn't talk about any of that. So, but that's why it's interesting, I think. There's some ambiguity there. And it's interesting.
Yeah, okay. So let's describe the landscape, because as I understand it, it's just a vast ocean of grass.
Yes, the Eurasian steppe.
Yeah.
The steppe, the great steppe, the steppe peoples.
Yes.
Some say that the Eurasian steppe, most people say it's from Mongolia in the east. Mm-hmm. Some even say as far as Manchuria in the east, all the way through Central Asia, all the Stans, Kazakhstan, Ukraine, all the way past the north of the Black Sea, all the way into sort of the Hungarian steppe. So all the way to Hungary. And so that is obviously a vast swathe of land. It's mostly grassland, because much south than that, it gets very arid and hot and deserty.
Yeah.
And north of that is very cold and tundras and permafrosts. But in the middle bit there, it's lush grassland. Certainly the further west you go, it's much more verdant and lush. Barry Cunliffe talked about how the grass is literally greener on the other side. Right. Yeah, the further west you go, it's literally greener.
And so you can see why these nomadic sort of horsemen would be, and I assume they've got vast flocks of animals as well. They don't do agriculture generally, do they?
Well, there's some that do, some that don't, but mostly not. I mean, the mostly they're nomadic.
So you've got these huge herds and groups of people moving with the herds. Of course, they're going to keep coming west to the better grass. I mean, they're incentivized to do so, aren't they?
Yeah. Professor Cunliffe, Professor Sir Barry Cunliffe, says that. He's the same guy who wrote the book about Pythias.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's great. He says it's a landscape of movement.
Yes.
Always tempting you further west. And that's what we, people that know their history, like the sweep of history, they're quite often people coming from the east into Europe, and it sort of funnels you towards Hungary or Anatolia or Hungary, one way or the other.
Yeah.
It funnels people that way, because there's lots of examples, aren't there? You know, the Huns Alans and the Mongols.
Well, and the Sumerians and, exactly. There are so many. And this is something I think in the modern era, we really... don't appreciate just how safe the world is at the moment, because literally at any point in time in history, it seems that a giant and merciless horde of these steppe nomads could just turn up and start killing and raping and burning and pillaging everything. And you'd be like, right, okay, well, you know, I didn't expect that. No one expected that. They just appear out of nowhere, and suddenly there's 100,000 of them, and they want to kill everyone. Oh, brilliant. You know, that's all. But that happened regularly throughout history. Really, like, you know, once every kind of few hundred years. Mm. Here's a new group of barbarian savages who are here to kill everyone. Great. Can't even buy them off. You know, like, but anyway,
the Scythians, although their burials are very, some of them are extremely rich with gold. One of the things known about them is that they're not particularly interested in money, just in general. They're sort of not interested in markets or gold or silver. But even that is sort of up for debate, because there are some Kurgan mounds, they call them, with loads of gold in it. This idea that there are sort of waves of displaced people from the east that come, forced further west.
Yeah.
That just seems to happen again and again and again. And yeah, we are very lucky, really, to live in a world where you can fully expect not to be overrun by barbaric people that are going to do the worst things possible to you and your family.
And one of the things I think is important to note is they're always unbelievably good warriors, because it's a very rough place that they come from. The far steppes, the Mongols learned this when their sons started being raised in China after conquering China, and they were like, wait, our sons are soft. We can't have that. And so they used to send their sons back to Mongolia to be raised, so they didn't turn out soft like the Chinese. And this was something that they found. And so it's like, right, so you've got this incredibly rough place that ends up like creating massive nations of barbarians and sending them across to what I guess we would call the civilized world. It's pretty mad.
Yeah, this idea that you're sort of almost born in the saddle, from the youngest possible age, as soon as it's really possible to put you on a horse, they will do it, and it's just complete second nature, muscle memory, whatever you want to say.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Scythians are absolutely part of that tradition. I mean, sort of the, not originators, some people say, or Herodotus says they're sort of the first of these great steppe horse lords, but that's not the case now. We know that's not the case. There are cultures and peoples that predate the Scythians. The Yamna people, for example, the corded wear culture.
Yeah, we don't even know their names. Written history. We don't know what they called themselves or what other people called them.
Exactly. Like the Scythians didn't write anything down.
No.
That's why we have to rely on Herodotus and Pliny and Strabo and things. I mean, in Greek, was it the Skoloi, I think the Greeks called them. They gave them the name. But again, it's this thing, when do the Scythians turn into Sarmatians or Indians or Parthians or Persians?
Idea.
No one does.
That's the thing, isn't it? Because you always get, in each era that the historian is writing, there is something north of the Black Sea that is essentially the same thing as the Scythians, but they've always got a different name, like Sarmatians or the Alans or whatever it is. And it's just like, okay, I mean, they just must have been a group of people who turned up, defeated whoever was there, absorbed whatever was left, and then became the new barbaric tribe that's on the fringe of the world.
That's exactly right. And I think it's kind of easy for someone like Herodotus just to call them all Scythians.
What else are you going to do?
Yeah.
I don't know what his options are.
Yeah. Right? I mean, if we go back to... So I've heard someone say that the Scythians that we're going to talk about, so this is the horse peoples from the sort of Pontic steppe, the Black Sea, Pontus, or the kingdom of Pontus later is more to the south.
Yeah.
But anyway, the Pontic steppe north of the Black Sea, sort of at their height, we're talking 7th, 8th century BC to sort of 2nd or 3rd century BC, up to the age of Alexander, roughly. But there are accounts, it does seem, from archaeology and from genetic research, they were certainly around 2000 BC.
Yeah.
But they only really sort of hit their stride, if you like, or Herodotus gives the impression they only really hit their stride in sort of the 7th, 8th century. I mean, you've got a classic bit of Herodotus where he sort of makes up what is to us nonsense. You know, that they're descended from the first king, Scythes, who's a descendant of Hercules and a half serpent woman.
Okay, well, I'm going to be the Herodotus defense force once again and say, I don't think he made it up. I think someone told him.
Oh yeah, I don't think he made it up, yeah. But it's just just, you know, obviously can't be true. You know,
the mythological origins of the Scythians, as told probably by the Scythians themselves or something like that. You know, they've got the warrior hero and then a mythological woman. Mm. So, okay. That's what they tell themselves. It's not true.
Yeah.
Probably.
Probably. We don't know. I mean, another thing, just on that note, I suppose, good point to mention, is that he talks about griffins, griffins up there.
Yeah.
And because we don't think griffins are real. Well. So, men with goat's feet.
Yeah. And men in India that had the feet, the dog's heads and feet reversed and things like this. But to Herodotus's credit, whenever he's told these stories, he always makes a note saying, I don't believe this.
Yeah.
I don't believe this. I don't believe this. So good on him, you know.
And he does say it quite a lot.
He does.
I mean, when he does say something that's ridiculous, to us silly, like those griffins, he does quite often say, I don't believe that. I'm just letting you know.
So, but this is what I was told.
Yeah.
And this is why Herodotus gets a bad rap, and I'm always going
to
defend him.
Didn't the dog-headed thing survive into like the Middle Ages?
Yes, sort it
of,
did.
Yeah, there are those pictures of people drawing like the 13th century over drawing guys with dog heads. Yeah, so
with feet face backwards for some reason.
Yeah, God knows why. It's funny, isn't it, where you've got like the imagination sort of a child really still at play in sort of the adult world.
Yeah. But notice how it's always in a very, very regular pattern. It's, you know, the people you're talking about know about themselves, and then they know about the next group, and they know about the next group, but then it starts getting quite flexible with what's probably real, and then you end up with mythological beasts. And it's like and it's always the proximity. It's always proximity. So,
Well, there's one bit, maybe we can talk about that right now, the bit where Herodotus talks about what is sort of beyond the Scythian lands. And he talks about that there are lots of different types of Scythian to begin with. There's what he calls the royal Scythians.
Yeah.
Which are like a bit beyond the sort of the southern Ukraine, I'm talking modern day southern Ukraine, Kazakhstan area, north of the Black Sea, a bit beyond that, eastwards, sort of the royal Scythians.
I found these a fascinating culture that he described, because I recently reread Herodotus, so I'm fairly fresh in my memory on this. And it's the idea that this group of Scythians have the opinion of themselves that they're the rulers of all the Scythians, and they're the ones who are the important. So they kind of sounded like the Spartans in a way to me. You know, they've just got this idea about themselves that, no, we're the first men of Greece, you know, we're the first men of Scythia, you know, you know that, and we know that. And it's like, how do they, you know, like, how do they just, I mean, they must win a lot of wars or something, I suppose.
Yeah, Herodotus says they considered themselves just the preeminent of the Scythians. But already there, you can immediately see that there's different tribes, different maybe family groups, possibly different, slightly different ethnicities. We're not really sure.
Well, we can probably find some sort of analogy in Britain, can't we, with the different areas of Britain and the attitude that the areas of Britain have towards themselves and the other areas.
Yeah.
It's probably something similar.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.